No organization tracks how what happens when Wisconsin school districts ask their local residents to approve or deny referendums like the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. And recently, the Taxpayer Alliance came up with this very, I find it startling, number. Between January of 2016 and April 4 of this year, bonding or building referendums totaled $1.81 billion. So I'm really glad Todd Barry, president of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance, is in to talk about this fascinating trend.
Good
Todd,
to be
welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back. But first of all, let's set the table. School districts ask their voters to approve building or bonding referendums. Mm-hmm. That's one type.
Yep.
Then they also ask for operating. So talk
right.
about the two types
yeah.
of operating.
Yeah. Well, there have been since 93-94 options for school districts to ask for relief from state-imposed revenue limits, and they can ask for two types. One is non-recurring, meaning there's a time limit, 3 years, 5 years. Recurring means you get a permanent exception. From the revenue limit. Not surprisingly, not very many districts go for recurring referenda, and they don't generally pass at a terribly high rate. Most go for 3, 4, 5 year non-recurring, and those have been passing at a greater rate.
And in Green Bay, they asked for, I want to get the term right, a non-recurring mm-hmm. for $16.5 million per year. You can exceed the revenue mm-hmm. limits for 10 years for a total of $165 million. That's an example of a non-recurring.
Right.
Because there's a fixed limit
right.
on that borrowing. Okay, but mm-hmm. now the one that intrigues me is the referendums that pass or fail to build buildings or new buildings, remodel, things like mm-hmm. that. That's the $1.81 billion since January of 2016. Now, I was surprised by that number.
So were we.
What surprised you and why?
Well, because the number of building referenda in dollars had been fairly modest back a few years ago. I mean, I think back 2011, 12, somewhere in there, it was like $100 million a year, which is if not much. And all of a sudden, there's this spike in 2016, and it continued into 2017. And as we got to thinking, we said, oh, what happened 20 years ago? And the answer was, a lot of school districts, we had a big building bonding explosion because the state for a while said that it would pay 2/3 of the costs of schools. Well,
1990s.
Yeah, the local school district said, well, if we need to rebuild or remodel, we better do it now before this 2/3 promise expires. Well, indeed, as a lot of us predicted, the state couldn't sustain that promise financially, and Governor Doyle proposed and the legislature agreed to get rid of it in 2003. So what do we have now? Fast forward 20 years, we have those bonding issues coming to an end.
Are they typically issued for 20 years, Todd?
For 20 years, yeah. And so 1996, 1997 plus 20 is now. And so that's why we think they're coming off old issues and they can bring in new ones. The other thing is there are districts that are going to building referenda. They tend to be ones with growing enrollment. There's definitely two or three Wisconsins out there in terms of what's going on with referendum.
The two or three Wisconsins yeah. is what I want to get into. Thank you for your research director coming up with the 10 most expensive, 10 biggest, let's use mm-hmm. biggest, mm-hmm. referendums in that period, January 6th, mm-hmm. 2016 through April 4th.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go down them right now. We're showing them on a graphic.
Yeah.
Verona area, $181.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if that's a record for a bonding referendum, do you?
I think it is, but I don't carry around the amounts of every bonding referendum since time immemorial. What is special about Verona? Well, it's a very fast-growing district, in part because it's a Madison suburb, in part because it's a pretty good school district, and people that may have lived in Madison are seeking out a good suburban district. And then there's the other little issue, which is it has this very large corporate resident called Epic, which
is exploding.
Yeah, it's about 9,000 employees, and it wasn't even in Verona 20 years ago.
Right. So is the Verona expansion of 181.2 million, a rather large number, is that an aberration? Because it's tied to a TIF district, right? As EPIC expands, is the growth in EPIC going to pay for most of this referendum?
Well, obviously, when you have a large taxpayer with a lot of value, and you are asking people to pay more property taxes, that on the margin it will shift more to the places with high value.
Yeah.
But again, remember, Verona is growing for all sorts of reasons. One of the things that doesn't get said about Verona, which is one of the more complicated things of all this, is that the way the state school funding formula works is EPIC is Verona is actually, their taxpayers are actually going to have to pay more than a dollar in property taxes for every dollar they need to build. And the reason is the school aid formula redistributes money away from higher spending, wealthier school districts. And so they are what's called negative tertiary. And districts like Verona, like Middleton in the Madison suburbs and others, actually, if they spend more, may have to increase disproportionately their own taxes.
So there are very unique circumstances in Verona. So let's go back to a few of the other top 10. Superior, 92.5 million. Hudson, 90.4 million. Sun Prairie, now that's another, that's been the fastest growing city in Wisconsin. 89.5 million, that's a new high school.
Yep.
Germantown, 84 million. Green Bay, 68.2. Separate from what we alluded to earlier, the operating permission to exceed revenues by 16.5 over 10, 165 million. McFarland, 65.1. Oconomowoc area, 54.9. Mukwonago, 49.5. And finally, Beaver Dam, 48.9.
Look at almost all of those.
Right.
Suburban ring around Milwaukee, suburban ring around Madison.
Not Superior, not Hudson.
Well, Hudson is suburban ring around Minneapolis-St. Paul. St. Croix County, which is where Hudson is the fastest growing county in the state, if I recall.
Okay. But do you see any trends in the 10 largest between January 2016 and April 4 of this year? Any broad brush conclusions?
No, other than if you are an enrollment growing district, you're more likely to have a building referendum. It helps in order to be able to tell your taxpayers somewhat untruthfully that their property taxes aren't going up because they have some bonds coming off. And, part of it, I think, is just timing. Now, Superior, I don't know the details of it, but I would guess it's not an area that's growing rapidly in population. Generally, northern Wisconsin is losing kids and families. But it may be a situation where they saw that they needed a number of things remodeled and so forth, and they decided, well, there seem to be more of these coming now. They're passing more. Maybe if we're ever going to do this, we should do it now.
Both Superior and Hudson approved bonding referendums of more than $90
million. Mm-hmm.
When those are paid off, let's assume a 20-year payoff period, what's going to be the total cost? Is it going to more than double?
Well, the interest rates are fairly low. For instance, we were looking at the total value of building referenda, not only the $1.8 billion you suggested, but going back 2 years before, and we were seeing about $2.8, $2.9 billion. To put that in some context, at a 2.5% interest rate, that's about $234 million of annual debt payments. So it's, that, which is about one-tenth of what, the total cost.
You think voters in Superior and Hudson are aware of the 20-year payoff number, are just looking short-term? Because that raises their property taxes. The heart of this, you have done, WTA has done studies about Wisconsin property taxes, and we've been falling. The governor has frozen the average home, property taxes on the average home. So we've been falling out of the top 10, but property taxes still remain very unpopular.
Yeah. I mean, what's really going on with property taxes is In terms of total levies, they're still going up. They're just going up, you know, 1 to 2% a year, which is not bad. But our, you know, our the most recent ranking figures, we were, I think, 11th highest in the country, still, you know, up there, and we have been forever.
Mm-hmm. When we look to go back once more on the 10 most expensive referendums, most of these passed in the southern half of Wisconsin. Coincidence, or do we? Is it part of this disparity? We're generally richer in the southern half than the northern.
Well,
half.
When you look at the districts you've listed there, a lot of them are suburban districts with higher home values, more property tax, and growing tax bases, so they can spread it over more more property value. The other thing is, if they're growing, that means they probably have younger families that are going to be more inclined to vote for these things because they're going to reap some benefit personally.
Well, okay, we've talked about the two types of ways that school districts ask for more money. Bonding and building referendums, operating referendums. Mm-hmm. What generally has been the passage rates? Are voters more inclined to raise their property taxes for building as opposed to operating?
Yeah. What we have seen historically is that there are some exceptions, but generally speaking, bonding building referenda, historically about half or less than half would pass.
And that's bonding, you know, and building.
Yeah. And in April, 53% passed. So it's not like a bonding. So it's not like the world is suddenly changing dramatically. You know, there's some years when it's higher, but you know, 53% in the midst of a supposed revenue cap referendum boom isn't exactly a big shift. Recurring referenda, or non-recurring referenda, those that are time limited, there is where the big change has come.
Okay.
We used to see about a half of them passing back in the 90s, early 2000s, and that was reaching 60 percentage range, you know, back at the turn of the decade, and it crossed 70% in 14, 15, and 2016 it crossed 80%. This April, interestingly, 75% passed, so actually the passage rate was down a little bit, but these are different districts than these building referendum districts. They tend to be smaller outstate districts, and particularly ones that are declining enrollment. And the reason they're going to referendum is that the state revenue limits tighten as they lose kids. And they have fixed costs, buildings, utilities, buses, things that they can't just automatically downsize with declining enrollment. So they're sort of caught a little bit between a rock and a hard place. And I think the reason these are passing is, one reason, is that the school districts are fairly small. They can have conversations with their voters. They can explain to them what is happening. And I think as long as you lay all your cards on the table and are honest, that voters in those kinds of districts will tend to vote for those, even though, you know, they're not rich by any means. But there's one thing that we have found in our research trumps property tax bills, and that's, are we going to have our local school?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
That's one of my questions is, are some of these referendums in smaller districts passing only to keep our local school district open?
I think so. And in fact, we have done several consulting studies for school boards where they were trying to close or had closed an outlying school, and there was a revolt among those outlying people and attempts to break away from the parent school district. And they didn't really care if it cost them an arm and a leg. They were willing to pay the extra money in order to have their local school. And it had everything to do with community identity and community economic health and family history and so forth.
Let's pursue that because on April 4, two districts that, well, first of all, Aliva Strum, Western Wisconsin, 626 students, they passed a bonding referendum, only 626, and Cuba City, Southwest Wisconsin, only 679. Are you saying that those could have passed only to keep those schools open and expanded?
Well, are they building referenda or are they revenue cap referenda?
Well, I believe they actually both passed. This is this DPI worksheet.
Yeah.
Cuba City and Olivas Drum. So they both put up two.
Okay. And you're thinking one was a building and one was a revenue cap.
Yes, in each case.
And it may be that... that because they're declining enrollment, because they're financially stressed, they may have been deferring maintenance, and they're going for that. Generally speaking, those are the kinds of districts where there are declining enrollments and the revenue caps are getting tighter, and they're having to go to their voters and saying, look, if you want to continue to operate this school district with our buildings intact and open, then right. we're going to need a little help.
Right. Can I talk about one more rural school district? Okay, I'm showing the walk. I'm sorry. Goodman Armstrong.
I was just there in the last week or two.
Then they have 109 students. Mm-hmm. In March, they did a survey of their parents. They got a 34% response rate.
Which is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And 75% of those responding said we're over 55.
Mm-hmm.
And would you support another referendum? 58% said no. Mm-hmm. But now here's a question that really intrigues me. Should we, as the Goodman Armstrong School District, since you were just there, should we go to another referendum? Should we consolidate or should we dissolve?
Yeah.
Another referendum, 36%, consolidate, 48%. 1 in 4 said dissolve.
Mm-hmm.
So you were just there. What did you hear about the future of Goodman Armstrong Schools with 106 students?
I was with school board and school superintendent people from all those little districts in Northeast Wisconsin. So we didn't talk about Goodman Armstrong specifically. But when you drive north of Shawano, somewhere you can just literally feel the population not growing, business is not prospering, and that they're just under a lot of economic and demographic pressure. But if they consolidate, or if they dissolve, and they're, in a sense, sort of the same thing, what you find when you drive up there is there's no school district with buildings near them. you drive 20, 30, 40 miles to the next town of any consequence. So all those places up there, Goodman Armstrong, Florence, Leona, Wabino, I mean, people who watch districts that are in some financial and demographic stress know the names. They have a really challenging situation because if you consolidate with somebody, how long can you put a kindergartner on a bus? Can you have distance learning for a kindergartner? It's very challenging, which is another thing that younger parents are seeing is, well, if we don't have our local school, mm-hmm. is not only does it hurt our economy and our community identity, but where's my kid going to go to school? I mean, it's all that's up there is trees and rocks.
I want to ask you about one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the district of Winter, which is in Taylor County.
Mm-hmm.
It has 313 students.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Fiscal Bureau, it has a per-student valuation. So you take the whole valuation mm-hmm. of the district divided by the 313 students. The average per-student value, $1.4 million.
Yeah. See, this is the great dichotomy of the North.
Is it still valid to look at some of these things? Winter, 313 students with an average property value per student, $1.4 mm-hmm. million. Krivitz, 719 students with an average property value of $1.1 million.
Yeah.
Is that still a fair way to look at it? Because when I talked to the school district administrator in Alma,
mm-hmm.
he said, we are on the river. We have many people who have bought second homes.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our full-time residents in the Alma School District cannot buy those second recreational homes. So talk to me about the disparity in per pupil wealth.
Yeah.
Sorry for the long question.
Yeah, this is hard because contrary to what some people say, the Wisconsin school aid formula, the equalization formula, is a pretty good formula, and it recognizes that communities without a lot of property to tax need some state help. Mm-hmm. The asterisk to all this is in the Krivitzes and the Winters, these pockets in the north that are not only declining enrollment, but have all this property value, lakefront property value to tax. Right. So you get in this strange situation where the state school aid formula says, this is a fairly wealthy district, so we're not going to give them as much money.
Even though the number of students is dropping.
Which means that more goes on the local property tax, which is fine for people with a lot of discretionary income in second homes. But as you get off the water, you have these families of fairly modest income.
Yes.
And fairly modest property.
Away from the Mississippi River.
Yeah. And that is has long, long, decades been a problem in Wisconsin school finance that we haven't been able to come to grips with. That is property rich, income poor school districts.
If I am a permanent resident of mm-hmm. Alma or Krivitz or Winter, and my daughter's graduating from the class of 17 from the local high school, mm-hmm. I would like them to stick around.
Yeah.
But are there jobs for them?
Yeah. Well, you know, it depends on the individual community. Maybe the family's in the tourist business. Maybe there is a small manufacturing company. They're tucked away in a lot of small towns in Wisconsin. But what we tend to be seeing in the demography across the state, and we've been seeing it for well over a decade, is that young people leave and they don't come back simply because there is an opportunity for them economically. So then you get into this catch-22 where then the people that are going to have children don't return, the population gets older, the enrollment declines.
Which is the last subject that you were sitting in that chair in. Remember the shortage of workers mm-hmm. as we mm-hmm. export mm-hmm. our youth mm-hmm. and the older people stay, mm-hmm. but that's a different subject.
Yeah. Well, the underlying demography is, as I have said to you many times, is I think the problem facing Wisconsin. In this case, we certainly don't want to do as a state anything that would sort of accelerate their problems. So they need to be able to live in their community and commute back and forth or bring workers in. They need roads, and they really need as much technological access to the outside world as they can, because if you have these younger families that can telecommute and work for some large well-paying company and do it over the internet, mm-hmm. we should do that. And the state, you know, talks about expanding broadband and has put some money in it. But you'll still run into parts of the state where they're saying, I have a dial-up modem and half the time I can't get on.
I have to go down to the library and use that.
Yeah.
Before we get into mm-hmm. what Senator Strobel wants to do, one more question. Can you see any referendum on bonding building ever passing in Milwaukee, which has 78,173 mm-hmm. students and a per pupil value of $324,000?
You know, they had a very, very large one many years ago, and it failed. Obviously, Milwaukee is a town under a lot of financial stress. It's hard to say because the numbers of kids in Milwaukee Public Schools has been declining, even though the overall school enrollment may have been fairly flat, and the reason is they go to suburban districts or they go to charter schools or they go to choice schools. Which of course is going to change the whole electoral dynamic, because the parent isn't going to want to spend money on a school that in a sense they've opted not to use. It's hard.
Now let's get into the debate in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Senator Strobel is offering a package of changes because he thinks school districts have manipulated or abused mm-hmm. property taxpayers. Mm-hmm. Senator Luther Olson, chairman of the Senate Education Committee, says it's not broken when if a local school district can convince their voters to raise their property taxes there's nothing broken about it.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the, well, first of all, let me ask, have you seen any evidence that school districts are manipulating when they hold these referendums, mm-hmm. maybe the Tuesday after the 4th yeah. of July yeah. when all seven voters yeah. show up?
Well, looking back at prior years, as we did in one of our publications a year or two ago, the largest number of referenda were by far were being held in April.
Okay.
The second largest number in November. The third highest number were in February, which would have been a spring primary.
Which is a statewide election.
And the fourth largest number were in September, which would be
a fall primary.
Election.
Yes.
Now we've since switched to August, but. So, yeah, there is some of this going on in off months. And, you know, I don't have strong feelings about this. If the legislature would prefer to let voters decide these things in elections where they're more likely to know there's an election
yep.
and vote, essentially they're saying, what's wrong with a little more democracy? And I can't argue with that.
Okay. Now, thanks to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for its yep. Saturday story, because it pointed out the specific changes that Senator Strobel and other mm-hmm. Republicans would like to make. So I just want to make three of these changes.
Okay.
They would cap non-recurring referendums at 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and they would subtract state aid from the district if voters approved an operating referendum. They would require all referendums to be held at either the fall or spring mm-hmm. general election, which you said has generally been happening. Now, finally, they would limit when school districts could operate. Limit when school districts could schedule referendums.
Mm-hmm.
In other
mm-hmm.
words, if you'd have to schedule a operating referendum at a regular meeting, you could only schedule a building or bonding referendum at the annual
mm-hmm.
meeting
mm-hmm.
where you set the tax levy.
Sure, sure.
Any thought in terms of whether we need these major
yeah.
policy changes?
Again, if there's some preference for favoring higher turnout regular elections, I don't have any problem with that. I think that's up to the legislature and the people. If the legislature chooses to limit the time limit of a non-recurring referendum to 5 years, I don't think it's a big deal because, frankly, they're generally in that time period or less anyway.
Okay. You seem to be saying, with Senator Olson, the system giving school district a chance to convince their local voters to raise their property taxes to support mm-hmm. specific needs is generally working?
Well, I mean,
but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Let's keep this in context. If you look at the number of recurring and non-recurring referenda by year, so far this year there were 26 that passed.
Okay.
All of last year there were 58.
Okay.
The prior year, 35, 47, 22, 23, going back. We have 420, depending on the year, 21, 22, 23, 24 school districts. You can't argue, I'd say, that this is out of control. There are no more or fewer revenue limit referenda, all things being considered now, than 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Is there some giant property tax effect going on? Well, if you look at the rate of the school levy increase in December, it was close to zero. And school levies have been because of revenue limits,
mm-hmm.
going up very little. Now, would a borrowing referendum or a revenue limit referendum add to levy? Potentially. But again, in the scheme of things, these referenda are not everywhere all the time.
Okay.
So again, I leave that to legislators and the public. I think a useful test is just to say, does this enhance public understanding? Does it enhance transparency? Does it maximize the ability for the public to participate? And some of those, I think, do.
Okay.
I think where it gets harder to justify, if you believe in the statement about revenue limits, that, you know, revenue limits aren't so bad because local voters get to make a decision to override.
You have this escape valve. Yeah.
Now, if, and that was has always been the sales point and the point of defense for them. If you're going to suddenly say, we aren't going to operate under that set of rules, then I think if you apply the democracy, transparency, public participation test, you know, I think you can get into a debate. Local voters have not spent like drunken sailors. They are not going to referendum all the time. Yes, more of the non-recurring referenda are passing, but those are the districts that tend to be small, declining enrollment, outstate, that have the most concern about keeping some local school in their
which is part
community.
Of their community's identity.
Yeah.
Okay, we're almost out of time, so yeah. Last question. Is the system that relies 42 or 43% on property taxes to pay for our K-12 schools, is that outdated?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need another school financing system in Wisconsin?
Well,
how's that for a wrap-up question?
Yeah. Well, remember, back in 93-94, we poured $1 billion into school aids, and we really did fundamentally shift the responsibility more to the state, and it has more or less remained there. I mean, there have been good years and bad years. I will tell you that having sat on panels with school people, surprisingly, if you run past them proposals that say, let the state pay for all this, mm-hmm. we'll guarantee you a certain amount per pupil and we'll give you that, and that's it. A lot of school districts will say, yeah, but we don't fit the mold. We have more sports, or we have more foreign languages, or we pay our teachers more. There's something unique about their district, and they want to have some kind of local source of revenue that they can accommodate those local wishes and desires. So,
which is why we have a system of referendums.
And a system that matches local control and state control, and it's the balance is tough, but it's there.
What a valuable discussion. Todd Berry, president of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance, thanks for returning. This is a fascinating subject. My school district passed a referendum. Did yours in the last period?
I'm trying to think. I don't think I live in Middleton, and we are growing enrollment, and we haven't passed one in a few years. But, you know, if it continues to grow, they'll be back.
Todd, thanks very much. Thank you.